one in, was asking me to come to order, is the tape on? Okay, great. So Representative Halsham is in the room, so we're delighted to have her join us this morning, and we've got, I would imagine, some folks from the St. Paul Port Authority with her. And so, could someone please move House File 1106 for possible inclusion, Representative Hillstrom? Sorry, we don't have a quorum, so we're not going to take the motion. We will maybe after you're even gone already. Depends how quick this goes. So Representative Halsham, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I should make clear that this really doesn't have to do with the St. Paul Port Authority, but okay. District Cooling. And so the gentleman I have with me, Andrew Tinkett, is from the District Cooling. This bill is actually necessitated by our current economic condition, as he will explain to you. We have talked to Kathy Cardell of MMB for her advice on this bill, and she preferred that we bring this as a special law and that we preferably deal with it as a credit rather than a refund, and so our bill draft reflects the advice from MMB as to drafting. You have a revenue form, I think, that indicates no costs or savings before you, and I will say no more and just have Mr. Tate explain the situation.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. My name is Andrew Cassid. I'm the Senior Vice President of District Energy, St. Paul, District Cooling, St. Paul, and affiliate companies. I'm here today on the bill before you for the using the bond allocation deposit towards a future financing in 2009. To give you a background on District Cooling, St. Paul, we are Minnesota nonprofit corporation established in 1988. We began serving customers in 1993. Today we serve over 95 buildings totaling 18.8 million square feet and have issued over $67 million in revenue bonds since 1991. With respect to the state bonding allocation, since 1980, since 2002, we've issued $12.5 million worth of tax-exempt bonding allocation through the Port Authority, St. Paul Port Authority. On this issue today, back in August 2008, we received bonding allocation for the St. Paul District Cooling Project through the St. Paul Port Authority. The application included a deposit of $31,800 towards the bond issuance. The proceeds of that bond issuance were to be used to fund distribution system construction to sign new customers to our system. We were set up to close the bond issue in October 2008. Things were proceeding on that course until the extraordinary financial market conditions in September 2008, which increased our bond rates from as low as 2% earlier in the month of September to over 9%. Given the changes in the market and the financial condition of the letter of credit provider, it was no longer possible to issue the bonds under that structure. We were able to find an additional partner to work with us on the letter of credit bonds in November of 2008, but that bank stipulated that the bonds carry a fixed rate financing. We moved forward to issue under a fixed rate financing, but were unable, due to the lack of liquidity in the fixed rate market, we were unable to issue by the December 2nd deadline. And what we're asking today is to use that deposit towards a future allocation request in 2009. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cassett. And thank you, Representative Halsham, for bringing this forward. I think for members, this is a really strictly a timing issue where in the market, a number of municipalities are in the same situation and they don't want to kind of be doubly charged for the fee. So I think it's a very straightforward, simple, easy request. And while we can't move your bill, Representative Halsham, I know Representative Hillstrom will as soon as we have a quorum, but I don't know if you have other testifiers or anyone in the public wants to speak for or against this. Please come forward if you do. I think this is just a very simple thing, and we would intend to include it in the omnibus tax bill, even though we won't actually vote on it today. Mr. Cassatt, relay things over for possible inclusion. I guess I would just add, there's a possibility that we'd have a public finance bill sent separately. In past years, they've always, pretty much always been included in the omnibus tax bill, but depending on what happens with that, we might want to revisit a public finance bill, and so it may go in both bills, potentially, as a way to ensure it gets done. But I guess as the Department of Revenue, have you heard from them? I would imagine they're kind of on board.
We just talked to Ms. Cardell from MMD.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you. Are there questions from members or public testimony? Okay, so Representative Hillstrom, we have a quorum. So Representative Hillstrom moves House File 1106 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And I will lay that over, and thank you for being here, Mr. Cassatt, and thank you, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I move the minutes of March 23rd, 2009.
Thank you, Representative David. Moves the minutes of March 23rd. Discuss into the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. And we're going to take Representative Thiessen next if we can. I think the Solberg bill has some testifiers, and I think the Szymanski bill does as well. So welcome, Representative Thiessen. And would someone like to move House File 722 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax?
Madam Chair.
Representative Wood moves House File 722 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And members will recall this bill was removed because Representative Mullery wanted to hear it. He's heard it and sent it back, so we can take it up now. And with that, Representative Thiessen.
I can, Madam Chair, thank you. Can we also move the A4 amendments?
Representative Reed moves the A4 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like it. Discussion to the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This legislation builds on some work that we did starting in 2003, where the legislature actually passed the first in the country set of standards for the to control the conduct of commercial tax repairs. And other states have done passed those laws as well, kind of brought some new ideas to the table. And we've also learned from our own experience in the last 4 or 5 years about what is working. And so this basically moves forward, does a couple of things on that tax preparation service area, does a couple of things. It includes a couple of new standards that we hadn't included before, particularly aimed at commingling of funds. It requires a written agreement so that there's a little bit more transparency in the process. It includes a right of rescission, which is what Representative Mullery really wanted to look at in his committee, of 1 day, so that if people sign up for these refund anticipation loans and then on second consideration think, you know, I would get my money in 3 days anyway, and so I don't have to pay the fees, they can back out of it. It also has a section on advertising, that if you advertise your services in a foreign language, that you have to provide the documents in the language that you advertise in. So if you advertise in Spanish, you have to provide the documentation in Spanish. And I'd be open, I guess, for any questions instead of walking through everything.
Okay. Can I just interrupt you for a minute, Representative Thiessen? We want to take a moment to welcome the ninth grade students of St. Louis Park High School. Thank you for being with us today. Welcome. Okay, so thank you. So Representative Thiessen, did you want to testify, or are you just here for questions?
Yes.
Committee members, do you have any questions on the Thiessen bill? Public testimony. Anyone for or against the House File 722 want to step forward and we'll take your testimony? If not, further questions from the committee? If not, we're going to lay your bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Thiessen, and also thank you for being willing to get your bill off to Representative Mullery's committee first and send it back. Thank you for that. We'll lay that over. I think Representative Solberg, I'm just guessing by looking at Representative Szymanski, I think he's got more testifiers maybe. So,
I'm on the committee. You want me to?
I don't. Representative Szymanski, you want to go ahead? Representative Solberg's willing to do that. Welcome, Representative Szymanski. And if I may, I want to go ahead and move House File 1040 to send it to the General Register. And I want to just take a minute on this motion so people understand what's going on here. And this will confuse Representative Solberg's folks in the room. In the Tax Committee, we have not been sending out bills alone. I know everybody thinks their bill is an urgent crisis and they need them to be sent out alone. But in general, we lay them over classical inclusion, and so that's what we've been doing all year. Sometimes if the Senate gets their work done and sends a bill to us, we can rest assured then that we're not sending them a tax vehicle. And that's one of the few powers the House has, is to hold its ability to raise revenue and have that power over the Senate. So in general, in the House Tax Committee, and this has been bipartisan for the 11 years I've served on it, chairs have not sent bills to the Senate to provide tax vehicles. So I know a lot of people want these bills to be sent that way, but we're going to make an exception here for Representative Szymanski today, and there's a rare exception indeed. Representative Szymanski has worked with me and Representative Broad, Representative Seifert, the Speaker, and is now working with the Senate to ensure that this bill can get through the process early with no amendments from either side on the floor. And Representative Szymanski has agreed that any commotion on the floor, the bill is going to be pulled. The reason this is of urgent is this bill is requiring an election in his community on May 2nd. So if we wait for the omnibus tax bill, he's going to miss it. So, you know, I'm hoping members can feel comfortable with this process. It's unique for the tax committee members to do this. But we're trying to get the assurances for everyone involved that we can help Representative Szymanski, who's attempting to make a significant change in his community for what their school districts are about. But just to understand why we're even making a motion to the General Register, which is new for this committee, I just wanted the committee members to understand what we're doing here. So with that, and if committee members don't like that, I'm sure we'll make a different motion, Representative Szymanski, but we'll go ahead and have you explain your bill to us so people can understand what's going on. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And with me today is Superintendent Tony Boyer of the McLeod West School District. The McLeod West School District was a consolidation of the school districts of Stewart and Brownton communities in 1998. The district is suffering from low enrollment and the failure of operating and building referendums in the past, and at this point they find that they're on the verge of losing the district through dissolution or preferably by consolidation with a neighboring district. In the process of dissolving this district, there will be a remainder of statutory operating debt, and the purpose of this bill is to authorize a bond sale that would take the obligations of the debt and have it reside within the boundaries of the existing McLeod West School District rather than encumbering the other consolidating districts. So at this point, I would like to introduce Superintendent Tony Boyer from McLeod West Schools, and he will provide further details.
Welcome to the committee, Superintendent Boyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Some of you have heard this background before. I'll be very brief with it. I came into the McLeod West District back last February in an attempt to help them out of a crisis that has been developing there for several years. And that crisis was self-inflicted for the most part. Two communities who went together, and by all estimates, in the 14 months I've been there, they probably shouldn't have gone together. And the reason I say that is because I see a lack of agreement between the two communities almost without exception. That being said, last spring I advised the board to go to a K-6 or K-8 school. They wanted to continue to have a K-12 school. They lost so much enrollment that the debt, which was $750,000, doubled. And now is over $1.5 million with the severance package and the debt that will be incurred to close this down. It'll be closer to $2.5 million before we're done on June 30th. I've been working with our neighboring districts for the last 4 months since the operating levy failed in November 4th of 2008. A levy that I felt if we'd gone to a K-6 we could save that part of the enrollment into the district for 5 years, work our debt down, and see where we would end up. The levy failed. Our literature had told the public at that time that the debt, the reorg debt, would be placed on all properties, including ag land. It's written in our literature, and that's the way the statute reads. I'm here asking that the House Committee support this GO bond, because this is the only way that we can keep the transparency of the debt into McLeod West, into the existing McLeod West district. And we believe, and supported by the three superintendents that sit behind me, that without this GO bond, one of the four districts voting will vote no, and therefore we will go into disillusionment. That will be unacceptable for the students of all four districts. And I think will be unacceptable to the counties that are involved with this. And I think will be unacceptable to the Department of Education and the Commissioner of Education, as disillusionment is very messy and would not serve our students, all of our students, very well. Thank you for your time, and if I can answer any questions, I certainly will.
Thank you, Superintendent. Representative Szymanski, did the other superintendents want to testify? Are they just here for backup and support, or anybody else on your bill? Okay. Please, yes, come forward. We can get you on the tape here.
Good morning, welcome. Madam Chair, Representative. My name is Rick Clark. I'm the superintendent of Buffalo Lake Hector Schools. We have a rare and unique experience. We have four superintendents who are seated, and with Mr. Boyer present, that's five, and we are in complete agreement. In rural schools, that is a challenge. One of the conversations about dissolution and consolidation as it stands under Minnesota statutes is there's only one significant difference. One is the election for consolidation with a state aid, and the other is involuntary dissolution, in which the county of the greatest landmass commission makes the decision on platting, and the commissioner of education makes the asset and deficit. Under either one of those, without the general obligation bond in place, we're going to have to cash flow those items. If I'm not mistaken, McLeod West has a $1.25 million loan that is due in mid-August. With the financial conditions of this state and two wings of the legislature talking about substantial tax shifting, we don't have the money. In addition to that, because we do have some money to run that, we won't be eligible under the Minnesota School Board's liquid asset aid anticipated borrowing. So we're going to be probably sitting in this chair in a year from now, if we don't get some support on this, either at the verge or in SOD, forced on by somebody else's decision. So we're asking for the support on this. Just the bottom line to it is, what's in the best interest of all of the kids in the area? Get them into proper schools and take the adult situations away from their educational system. So we're asking for this support. Buffalo Lake Hector School Board has passed a number of items in complete and unanimous agreement that a consolidation is the best interest, and that additional money. I have one caveat to this. If May 5th comes and goes with a failure to this referendum question, the challenge will be with Pelra law. And the challenge with Pelra law will be that we will have an allotment or unallotment of the seniority shift, and then people will be laid off after the April 15th requirement for timetables. And then someone will have to make a decision about which law, Minnesota 123A or the Pelra rules. And I would suggest that if we could put this onto the floor as a standalone vote, get the general public in a position where they understand that no inherent debt will come along with these consolidations, it will go a long way to resolve the issue.
Thank you for your testimony. Superintendent, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve Malone, School Superintendent at Gibbon Fairfax in Winthrop. The GFW Board is in support of the consolidation plan. I would just like to add that with or without this bill, the McLeod West debt will remain with the McLeod West taxpayers. but the bill will alleviate cash flow concerns for the consolidating school districts because, as Dr. Clark mentioned, the debt is due this summer, and without this bill, the consolidating districts would have to write those checks. And we just don't have the fund balance to carry that at this time. So we appreciate your support on the bill.
Thank you for being with us this morning. Welcome, Superintendent.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chris Sanju, and I'm the superintendent at Glencoe Silver Lake, and I just want to add my support of this bill as well. Our board has in favor of this 6-0 as well, and we really hope that, this is, we truly believe that this is in the best interest of kids, and so we want to thank you for your consideration of this bill.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I just want to, if I may, if Representative Garofalo and Representative Marquardt and Dabney and Tilbury are here. I haven't seen Representative Demmer yet, but these are our members who serve on K-12 finance as well as this committee. And though this bill has already been heard in that committee, but I do think Representative Szymanski may want to get in on the discussion here. We have another outstanding problem with this bill in addition to its urgency, which is that the Senate, and I don't know if it was the Senate, if your Senate author did this, Representative Szymanski, I'm not really sure, offered an amendment. And so if we pass this bill out as is, we don't line up. So that's a problem. And if we pass, if we put on your amendment, we have different problems. So I think the K-12 Finance Committee members need to have a little understanding about what happened in the Senate, because there is, you know, precedence when we let some school districts change how what tax capacity we're going to spread the new debt on. And then we get the Minnesota Chamber and all kinds of people following what's happening here. So if you could, Representative Szymanski, tell all the committee what the amendment did, because I understand it's on the card and you've not yet decided if you want to offer it or not. What did the Senate do that's different than your bill? Because if we're going to get this to the General Register, we need everything to be lined up. So Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The House File 1040, as written, would assess the taxes against basically all property within the school district. The Senate amendment was to provide that for levy purposes, the levy would be levied against the, if I may just read the amendment,
sure.
Madam Chair, okay. Provided that the levy for the purpose of this subdivision be levied against the referendum market value as provided under Minnesota Statute Section 126C.01, Subdivision 3. And without having the statute in front of me, but I believe it is the house garage and 1 acre would be the levy basis for this bond referendum. If I may call Mr. John.
Well, if we could, before that, Representative Szymanski, I'd like to ask our own house research, Mr. Hines, to join us at the table. And so just to recall for members, some members are very aware of the differences of these two methods and some are not at all. So Mr. Hines, can you kind of give the nonpartisan review of these two different methods of levying taxes for school purposes and sort of the pluses and minuses of them? So, Mr. Hines, welcome.
Madam Chair, the way the bill stands now, which would have the debt levied against net tax capacity, the levy, is the tax base that we're used to thinking about with that, the class rate system that we often discuss are about homes are at 1%, commercial industrial at 1.5% and 2%, et cetera. And all taxable properties are part of the tax base for net tax capacity. Under the Senate amendment that Representative Szymanski has described, they apparently are proposing that it instead be levied against referendum market value. And the referendum market value tax base, it does not use class rates. It simply says that every dollar of property value is the same, whatever, if it's commercial versus residential. But then there's another big difference, though, is that the referendum market value tax base specifically excludes agricultural land and seasonal recreational property. So it's all the other property types are included. Commercial pays the same as residential, but a big difference in the case of a rural district is that ag land would not be part of that tax base. And I just quickly did a run on the two different ways of distributing the levy. And for a $100,000 home in that district, I get, and I hope this isn't going to contradict what they're going to say, but I get about a $360 tax on referendum market value versus about $157 on net tax capacity.
Okay. So Mr. Hines, we have some questions from committee members. And I know you have testifiers, Representative Nancy, but this is an important piece for the committee. I think it's really unfortunate what the Senate did. I just want to be straight up about that. And I think one of the alternatives for this committee could be to see if the Senate would remove that on the floor. We need to think this through, because what's happened now, and for the people who, you know, are in your world, and they want to just get it done and they want to get it passed, and I understand it, but we are of a tax committee and we have to figure out the precedent. We are divided as a group on both sides of the aisle on what the way is, but what we have normally for operating is now being used for debt. So this is not the way we would do debt, is what the Senate did. So we now have a problem here where members will feel like if we allow this to go forward, is this going to open the door to change the rules both in the K-12 Finance Committee and here? And if we were to do that, I think we just as a group need to decide how we want to address this. We need to make it crystal clear that that's not our intention to change the rules. So I think we have a problem now. Should the committee put this amendment on so it can just get done in time for the election? Or can we get the Senate to remove it? I honestly have no idea why they did that, and I think it's really hurt your bill. But I want to bipartisanly just have the discussion with the committee to think through how are we going to solve your crisis, and we're very divided on this issue. So first, Representative Rupadina.
If you say that the seasonal rent wouldn't be on the Senate
effort? Correct. I don't know if there is seasonal rent in that district, but that is correct.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I would suggest that the bill is currently here, just has to do it on the
Not a bad idea, Representative Rukavina.
And let's pass it out of here, everything. And then put it on for the minute.
Well, and Representative Rukavina, I mean, yes, this is the problem that, I mean, from a local interest, there's benefits, but from a statewide precedent, there's problems. So we need to work this through, and we have Representative Davids and Representative Garofalo who would like to talk on this as well. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe the House Research. The debt that we're looking at putting into a GO bond, is that debt that would normally be paid over all tax classes, or does House Garage 1 Acre apply here?
Mr. Hines.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, a debt levy would normally be spread against all property types the way the original bill is. Now, I'm not familiar enough with the circumstances, but if the only levy that's spread the other way against the referendum market value that excludes ag land is an operating referendum.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I would like to add...
Excuse me, hang on just a second. Mr. Hines, did you have further on it?
Essentially, I was just going to say that if perhaps this debt was looked at as a replacement for an operating referenda, there might be some rationale to do it that other way. But I don't know the specifics of the situation.
Okay, so just a second. Representative David?
If the gentleman has a comment on it.
Yes, okay.
Thank
please
you.
Welcome and state your name for the
Madam Chair, my name is John Husted, and I represent Citizens for Education, a group from McLeod West. Both farmers and people live in town, live in all the communities that we're talking about. And I used to be Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Education and was Commissioner briefly for a while. So I do have quite a bit of experience of communities and all the dynamics that can go on. But when you have an operating debt, which we're talking about here, and you go to the voters to get a levy to get rid of that operating debt, as Mr. Hines said, that is on referendum market value, not on net tax capacity. So this amendment that was put on in the Senate is actually very consistent with law. And in fact, specific language for specific school districts has been done in the past, 2005 in Prinzburg, this very same thing. So I think it's one of the reasons why I think this is
worth doing is because it is consistent with state law and past practice, and it's also from our point of view, of course, fair because it spreads the burden out. What Mr. Hines' example didn't talk about, of course, is what the ag land tax is. But more important than all of that is probably what the superintendent said. And we have talked to all the superintendents and the county commissioners and everybody about our amendment, and they are fine with our amendment. They realize that the most important thing is to get this referendum passed. And we believe the most likely chance to get the consolidation to go forward, because there has been a lot of acrimony in the past, is with an amendment that was put on by the Senate and that is here in this committee, if someone decides to offer whatever the committee is going to do with that. But that our group is willing to spend their own money and go out in a public relations campaign to help pass this referendum, and they have actually won every election referendum for the last 10 years. So their voice is pretty much represents, we believe, the majority of voters, at least in the past elections.
Okay, so Representative Davis has the floor, but we're going to have Representative Dabney to this point, then back to Davis and Garofalo. I just want to say, though, for the committee discussion internally, I think we all get that the easiest way for these guys to pass this is to do this, and so that they would support it that way. That doesn't mean we would agree this is the right policy. So we have to separate the local needs, and if we're going to help them pass it, then it's, it has to be really expressly clear that we're making this sort of one-time exception. I'll just be honest with committee members. I'm leaning towards Representative Rukavina's idea. Pass it as Representative Sinansky introduced it, which was, in my opinion, the best way to do it. And then Representative Sinansky and I can continue to work with Representative Seifert and Kelleher on the floor that possibly this could be brought forward as an amendment. I mean, I would like to try to get the Senate to undo this. I think it's a mistake. And I understand that locally it helps them get more votes when the farmers don't have to pay as much. I understand that. But we're also setting precedent for the whole state. So this discussion to this will go to Dabney, then Davis, then Garofalo. Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's been such a parade of superintendents. The first superintendent who came up, if my memory serves, stated that, I'm sorry, sir.
Boyer.
Boyer.
No.
No.
No?
Yeah, that's a...
that one.
By John McCain impression.
That one.
that was good.
I believe that he testified that the... And it may not have been him, but...
He's playing.
Superintendent testified that the campaign material... That the information going out to the community indicated that the referendum would be placed against all properties, including ag land. Now, sir, if that wasn't your statement, was that you who said that? Was somebody else? Can you clarify what information is going to the community?
Superintendent, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I have that literature in my packet here if you'd like to see it, but it's in very bold red print that says, if this referendum, operating referendum, does not pass, the reorganization debt will be spread across all properties, including agricultural land. Yes. That went out to all constituents of the district in the fall of the year and was presented as such at all of our hearings. That is also the way 123A.73 reads in the reorganization debt, and I have no vested interest in this. I do not live in the district. I'm not a taxpayer there. I am simply bringing the will of the school board of ISD 2887, and they support the statute as written without amendments. That's what they told me to come down here and say. I am employed by them, and that's what I am saying.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Thank you, Representative Dabney. Okay. And Representative David and Garofalo. Representative David.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And back to my question, the debt that has been incurred normally would have been paid back, spread out over all taxpayers. Is that correct? To Mr. Szymanski?
I'll defer to Superintendent Boyer and Mr. Gutsett.
Superintendent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, it would have been paid over the referendum market value, and that was our intent for offering the operating levy in the fall of the year. It was defeated. And with that message was another message that said, if this is defeated, The reorg debt will then go against all properties, including ag land. I don't think you give them a second bite of the apple, and that's what my board has instructed me to say.
Well, Madam David.
Well, obviously, with my line of questioning, I'm not on the education committee, but I'm just trying. I realize that, you know, I was carried the bill in the past for the house, garage, and 1 acre, that for excess levy overrides, it would be on the house and garage and 1 acre for farmers. But the money, the debt that has been incurred, isn't from an excess levy override. What am I missing here, Pat?
Representative, do you want to ask Mr. Hines to jump in on that,
Mr. Hines, if he can
clarify all this, and then we'll go to Representative Garofalo.
And Madam Chair, I can
because
clarify
I think
too.
We're, you know, we want to get the factual part here first. You know, we know people are lobbying on both sides of this, but we just want to get the facts first, Mr. Hines.
Madam Chair, what really can do is you're not repeating the question. I was doing some calculating. But
okay, Madam Chair, basically the question is the debt that they're going to geo bond for to cover that debt, is that debt that would normally be spread over the entire district, or is it excess levy override money that would be paid for by everybody except the farmers who pay house, garage, and 1 acre, not on the ag land itself?
Ms. Hines.
Madam Chair, this is David. This may get to the specifics of the case a little more than I'm fully informed about, but any debt levy, absent the change that you guys make, goes against net tax capacity, which includes ag land.
Okay.
But this is, if it's viewed, if it's a replacement for an operating levy, an operating referendum, then it would go against referendum market value. So this may be an odd circumstance where you might regard the debt levy. Normally, when we passed the law, we thought of debt levies as supporting buildings. So this is kind of a, and so the sort of legislative decision was to have all property types pay for school buildings and facility things. This kind of a debt levy may be enough different that it justifies doing something different.
Thank you, Mr. Crow. I see you back there. You probably wish I didn't. Can you come and join us at the table, please, and answer Mr. David's question from, and Mr. Hines has been very helpful. Mr. Crow, for members of the tax committee who don't understand his role, he is the nonpartisan researcher for the K-12 Finance Committee. Can you add some light to kind of what the members here are struggling with?
Madam Chair, I can ask Mr. Crow the question.
Okay. So we'll get him. And this bill has gone through K-12, and it went without an amendment. Okay, so now the Senate had the amendment, and K-12 heard it without the amendment. So, Mr. Crow, Representative Davis has a question.
Madam Chair, thank you, and Mr. Crow. Of the debt that we're talking about that they want to do a GO bond for, what kind of debt is that as far as, is that excess levy override money, or is it other money that would be spread out over all the taxpayers? Or building costs, or... what kind of debt is it?
Madam Chair, Representative Davis, the... do you mean the source of where the obligation came from?
Yes.
The money is as I understand it, and the districts might want to talk to this, but is operating funds that they have basically gone into debt for, or that they've used the note that's due in August basically to pay for.
And it is operating debt,
it's
not
operating,
building.
Right.
Okay, so Representative David, you're done?
I think I am. I'll
okay, Representative Garofalo.
Yeah.
Okay, so Representative Schmancy.
I have a couple of the other superintendents
okay.
would like to weigh in on that question.
Okay, hang on 1 second. We have still more questions, which I'd like to get, you know, I think we all get the emergency issue here, so we're just trying to figure it out. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate this discussion because I'm one of these people that she's discussing that doesn't really know about this stuff. So I'm getting an education here and, you know, and forgive me if it's kind of a simple question, but in the bill it says that this is a bond sale without an election, right? I mean, I understand that there's going to be an attempt to avoid having to do this, right? That's the election that's coming up in May. And that if that fails, that, well, anyway, my basic question is to issue these bonds would be issued without an election, correct? This would be something we would be authorizing you all just to do. Am I right? And then, so I'm seeing head shaking yes. Okay. Because we keep talking about their of taking a vote on this, and I think it makes a difference, because when we're talking about the two different things, we're talking about, you know, when we do an operating levy, we're talking about an all taxable properties net tax capacity. I think that I might be way off base here, but it seems to me kind of a difference here is whether we're talking about kind of the some relationship between whether we're talking about people or property. I don't know how clear I'm being here, but I think it really does make a difference. And if we're talking about doing something where we're not letting people vote on it, it makes more sense to me to stay with the way the bill is currently and not have the amendment from the Senate, because that seems to be sort of the scheme that's set out when we're not having people vote. I hope that makes sense.
And complicating this for Assembly, it does make sense. They are going to take a vote. I thought it was May 2nd. I guess it's May 5th on this whole reorganization. But you're right on how you vote in not having to have an election on bonding. So it is very complicated. That's why I wanted the tax committee to think this through, because we have to really... I mean, my guess is the Senate probably didn't have this discussion, and I wish they would have, but I'm going to, Representative Schmansky, I'm going to ask Mr. Michael, who is just cringing now that I'm asking him this, to, for everybody in the room, but mostly for committee members, if he can kind of sum up or clarify for everybody in here, really, what is the decision that the committee has to make with this, as Representative Schmansky introduces the bill, or the Senate version, maybe just helping us think through what is the decision. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't know that I can really add any clarity to this discussion, but I think basically there's basically a policy choice here as to the appropriate tax base that you use to pay for these costs. And I don't think, you know, sort of by, in part, I think the committee is a little bit going down the sort of the metaphysics road of trying to figure out, well, what is this most like? And I don't know how really helpful that is to you in making that policy decision. My impression is that this district basically was paying more for operations than it was getting in revenue. And those sources of revenue come from a variety of things. Primarily, they come from state aid. They also come from some net tax capacity levies, and they also come from some referendum market value levies, if you have a referendum market value levy. I think in this case, the district did not have that. And of course, what Mr. Crow and Mr. Hines said is right in terms of there's been a choice made that for basically bonding for buildings and capital improvements are spread on net tax capacity. Operating referenda are spread on this other tax base that excludes farms. Most other, all other school levies, which the legislature periodically authorizes without votes, are spread on net tax capacity. So it's not at all clear how you sort of analogize to any of this to sort of resolve it. But, you know, it's sort of a basic policy choice. The reason I think why the legislature opted to have operating referenda spread on market value was because the business community came and lobbied and said it's too easy to pass operating referenda because we're paying four times as much in those days as homes were. And the legislature said, yeah, I think we agree with that, and so we're going to, for those operating referenda, are going to require them to be spread on that flatter tax base. Then what happened was the agricultural folks came in and said, wait, we're paying too much. And so they got an exception, and they got the ag land taken out of that. And so that's sort of where we're at in the policy choice that you're faced with.
Representative Fuller.
In addition to that,
one sentence amendment will do.
And then the addition to that, the cabin owners came in and said, we don't want to pay anything either.
right?
Right.
That was much later.
But
that's right.
Nobody wants to pay. But I think, Madam Chair, as I look think of this, we have a couple of choices to make, and one of them is, as we've been discussing. But the other choice is if the referendum that they vote on to consolidate fails, then the State Department, as I understand it, comes in and says, you're going to go this way, and there's a debt there left over from the old district. And the old district has to pay the debt, or is that spread out over the whole of the new district? That's one question I'd like to ask.
A
simple yes or no?
It's the old, I believe. Reverend Schmansky.
Yeah. I'll defer to the Superintendent Clark.
Yes. Just a yes or no, just the old or all, or everybody?
Maybe. The issue is this, because the debt is divided amongst the holding districts by the level of asset assigned by MDE.
Okay.
So it is spread out over all of the districts. Yeah. Then the question is, that particular spreading out will be done over all property, including A.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But as it is now in the bill. Over against the other three districts, all property. Is that a question?
Madam Chair, if I may introduce Mr. Alan Holtman, a consultant to the school districts on this process.
Madam Chair, President Solberg, I'm Alan Holtman. I work for Northland Securities, and I'm a consultant to the McLeod West District on this consolidation process. And Representative Solberg, I'm sorry to say that the answer to your question is not very clear. The statutes on dissolving a school district by consolidation or by dissolution and attachment are extremely complex and are obsolete. And there are a number of things that are not clear. But the statute does provide that when a district goes to dissolution, the operating debt can be spread either over the old district, the district that incurred that debt, or can be spread over the new enlarged district.
But it can
go either way. That's why.
But that's not my question. My question is, on what property is it spread? Is it spread out over the referendum or the general?
Okay.
In other words, over farmland or not farmland?
That's very clear, and that is that it would be spread over all property.
Okay.
Spread on net tax capacity basis.
So I'm sure that's the point we need to make here, is that so some people don't want to pay taxes. I don't either. but it seems to me that it's very clear in state law that if we go down to the disillusionment part, which is the next step, that all property is going to be, so it seems to me that we should stick with that on this as well.
Okay, so we have Representative Anderson next, and Representative Schmansky, I think you've got to let us know if you're going to offer that amendment or if somebody else here wants to offer it, and we can see how it plays out. But I think you can see that the Senate action is sort of a problem. But Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Holtman, can you tell me, taking it one step further from Representative Solberg, who makes the decision whether it's the existing district or if it's spread out to the remaining districts? You said that it could go either way. Who makes the decision of which way it goes?
Representative Anderson, just to jump in here, I think he was first answering a different question when he said that, and we got to the question Representative Solberg was answering, and in statute it isn't optional. It's actually in statute that it would be spread. If the vote fails, it would be spread against all property. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Spread against on the basis of tax capacity.
Right.
Yeah. The question.
Everything.
I think Representative Anderson's question is whether it's spread over the existing district or the enlarged district.
Right.
In the consolidation process, that decision is made. There are a number of actors making the decision, but the school board proposed to the county auditor, and the county auditor prepares a consolidation plat, and the consolidation plat governs. The commissioner of education has the right to approve or modify that plat. All that has happened, and that has been approved on the basis that we've been discussing, which is the tax is spread only on McLeod West taxpayers, that debt will be paid only by McLeod West taxpayers.
Representative Anderson.
Okay. Thank you. That's it.
Representative Wheeling.
Okay,
thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'm getting a little clearer here, and I want to see if I'm right, because I think that the key thing here is not where the debt came from, but whether you're voting or not, taking a vote or not taking a vote. Okay. And I think, as I'm looking at this, when you do the referendum and you're using referendum market value, you're excluding people, that's when you're taking a vote, and you're excluding people who are not going to be voting, right? Like, and you're excluding seasonal rec. Well, you know, those are people who wouldn't be there to vote, right? So you're kind of saying, well, we're not going to make you pay because you're not there to get a vote. Or ag land, you know, we're not going to make all the ag land pay because you don't get a vote that's really proportional to that. Okay, that's how I'm thinking about this, and I might be totally off base. But then, in this case, we're not taking a vote. The voters are not going to get to weigh in on this. So in that case, it makes more sense to me to use the net tax capacity. Now, you know, I'm totally new to this. I might be thinking about this completely wrong. Somebody please tell me if I am. But that's kind of how as I'm listening to this, that's sort of how it's shaking out to me, that the difference is whether you're going to take a vote on it or not take a vote on it.
And Representative Lee, you have it right. There is a vote on consolidation, not on the pieces here. And so you'll hear testifiers say, well, there is a vote, but it's not about what you're talking about. So you're right. And I would tell you, if the chamber were here, which I do not see them, they would have a strong view of what's going on in this room right now. And that is another set of people property owners who do not have kids in schools going to the schools, who own commercial industrial property. So there's a lot of issues in that one sentence that the Senate added. So further questions from the committee members? Representative Lauper.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think for me, part of the relevance to this is also that the voters themselves rejected the narrower tax base just a few months ago. I mean, they were given the chance to solve the problem with the narrower tax base, and they chose not to do that. Maybe they didn't take the warning seriously. Maybe they didn't really believe that the school district, or they thought a miracle was going to happen. But it feels to me like we shouldn't be setting a precedent on this case based on when there's so recent a local referendum on even the topic that we're discussing.
Madam Chair, there's a really important point that needs to be made regarding that.
Excuse me, just a minute. We have to go through the chair.
I realize that. That's what I said.
Representative Loeffler, were you directing that to anybody individually, or are you just making a statement about how you're viewing it?
Madam Chair, I was mostly making a statement of how I'm weighing the decision. I'm not someone who's worked on school finance, but that seems to me a relevant piece of information.
Okay, so Representative Szymanski, did you want to have a testifier address her statement?
If I may.
Okay, thank you.
John has said thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Loeffler, I won't get into the long history of this, but Citizens for Education has always been about what's best for the education of the kids. And one of the problems with last fall's vote was it didn't lead to any real specific plan, which is in good outcomes, we feel, for what the district was trying to do. We have recognized in the last 2 years that consolidation was inevitably what was going to happen. We had plenty of suggestions before about ways, and some of them were mentioned by the superintendent, that this district could have remained and not spent $20 million on a K-12 school that was going to have 100 kids in their school district. That's what was happening. So the vote last fall was because there was no good plan. They would retire the debt, but you still wouldn't really know where these kids were going to be educated except in a condemned building in Broughton. So it wasn't just a vote like we had it, you know, that there was an opportunity to have a referendum market value, and they rejected that out of some kind of greed or illogic. It was very logical and tied to the whole past divisions of, you know, referendums have been going on for 10 years. It's not about farmers who don't want to pay taxes. It's about what are the best outcomes for those students in this district. And as we sit here, that's what we're talking about still. Consolidation is the way to go, not dissolution and attachment. And that's what we're trying to achieve, the best outcomes for those students. It's always been about that.
Okay, so Representative Dietrich, and you know what? I'm sorry. I mentioned all the K-12 Finance Committee members who serve on this committee, and I brought Representative Dietrich and Representative Dietrich.
Yes.
What's your thought on this whole thing?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm highly offended.
So anyhow, even though I'll continue on. I would just like to make a small clarification here. I think that when we start talking about this debt under normal operating referenda debt, that means that the schools and the school districts are going on as normally. But that has not happened in this situation. We are consolidating a school district. And so the families, the kids, the teachers, the people in that school district that are affected by that school district consolidating, it is not business as usual. Something has happened in their community. And I think it's really big. And actually, something is happening in our state, in outstate rural school districts. And so I don't know that we can just classify all this debt as normal operating referenda debt. I think we need to start looking at it as reorganizational operating debt. And do we need to have a new and different attitude about what happens to the debt when school districts reorganize? Because something has happened. For those people up in that district, the world has slightly changed. So that's my point. And in conclusion, though, I would suggest that we leave the bill as is, and we, you know, if the Senate has some great dispute and argument to leave it, to keep the amendment on it, it needs to be done in some sort of a conference type committee or in a smaller type group where this is really thoughtfully thought through. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that. And Representative Szymanski, it appears the committee's, both sides are kind of struggling with what the Senate did, and it's not your fault. And so we understand that. And they should have listened to you, Representative Szymanski. Representative Szymanski, what's your thought on how we should proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do not wish to offer the amendment at this time. I think we should, as the Representative Dietrich and others around the committee table have stated, let's work it out with the Senate and see what we can accomplish in kind of smoothing this whole situation through.
Okay. And thank you. You know, thank you for that. I know Representative Coonan and Representative Morrow care a lot about this. It's affecting their areas as well. And I think if everyone's okay with this, we'll take a vote to get this to the General Register, and then discussions should continue with Representative Szymanski prior to it being taken from the General Register. And if we can't work something out with the Senate, Representative Szymanski can offer it as an amendment on the floor that day. Unfortunately, I'll probably do a little debate with that. But we all, I think everybody in the room understands that we're going to get this all done before that election, one way or another. So we're tracking it through. But I think you're hearing why tax committee members have issues. And then it was heard the way you have it in K-12. Okay, so the K-12 Finance Committee never got to debate the Senate change. So I think Representative Dietrich and others, and you're a Green Representative Szymanski, would like to leave it as is. So I think we're going to, in just a second, take a vote to send it to the General Register. The first, Representative Coonan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think, you know, I'm not sure how long this is all going to take, but there is a definite deadline. And Representative Szymanski, Representative Szymanski, what is the drop-dead date that this thing needs to be passed so the school districts have enough time to prepare for the election?
Thank you, Representative Coonan. I would ask Superintendent Clark if he would care to answer that question.
Superintendent?
Madam Chair, members, my smart aleck remark would be yesterday. We are going to a unique election, and that is, we have agreed in this platting that has been agreed by Commissioner and by the MDE that if any portion, subdivision, so that is four school districts, any one of the four vote no, the entire thing is off. So the quicker we can get this information to the public that we are going to have a general obligation which places the principal and the interest on the McCaw district, the better it will be for what I call the new and enlarged districts.
Okay, and our intent is to get this done by deadline, one way or another. Representative Coonan.
Thank you, and I think the whole committee recognizes this. Madam Chair, I think that with that in mind, that we should pass the bill without the amendment and work with the Senate, Representative Szymanski,
and see where we end up, but to do this as quickly as possible. I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, and I hope all the superintendents here can find their way to walk through the tunnel to the Senate today, since you're here, and tell them what happened this morning, and then also find the Senate author and tell the Senate author what happened this morning, because time is of the essence, and but it creates a lot of issues. So, members, I will renew my motion that we send House File 1040, I believe it is, don't have it in front of me, we pass it and send it to the General Register. Discussion to the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Representative Szymanski and all of you, thank you. We'll keep.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, for a very thoughtful discussion on this issue. Thank you.
Madam Chair, and to the committee members as
thank
well.
Thank you. Representative Solberg, I bet you're regretting that you let Representative Szymanski go first. So, Representative Solberg moves 1073 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Is he an amendment? Okay. We're going to adjourn on time, so we're going to get through this one. What's that? Is there another amendment?
There is.
Madam Chair.
Representative Solberg, Mr. Michael's telling me you have an amendment.
Well, I...
Do we have it?
I don't have it. There's supposed to be an amendment that was...
Okay, so we can come back to it. Mr. Michael's going to go get it.
Okay,
so, Representative Solberg, we've already moved your bill for possible inclusion. We'll get the amendment when he's back. And so why don't we just get to it? Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, thank you very much, Seth.
Can we ask everyone to take it outside so we can hear Representative Solberg? Thank you so much. Representative Solberg, and he's looking for the pages. Thank you, Megan. Okay.
They're both the same.
Thank you, Representative
Solberg. Madam Chair, I think the Commissioner of Revenue will also...
Okay. Yes, welcome, Commissioner. Come on down.
Madam Chair, this is a simple bill that probably should be on the General Registry. In a fast manner. And let me just tell you the history. In the Senate, they do have it on the General Registry in there, or General Orders. And so maybe we can have a discussion if they pass it, to have a different track than what you have now.
On another day.
And I appreciate that.
Okay.
So this is a printing nexus, in effect. As I understand it, what it does is that we have major printers in state of Minnesota, and if someone delivers printing material, the paper to those printers, and they have a contract, let's say, with Time Life or some other outside printing, because they buy the paper and it's delivered to them directly here, that there's a potential that then that would make them have corporate income tax or other things be liable in the state of Minnesota. And so many of the printers are just saying we're not going to do that because it's cheaper, of course, to have the paper delivered from, let's say, in Brandon's case, from Brandon Paper Company to the printer here instead of shipping it out east and having to ship it back, which they could do. So with that, I have the commissioner with me. I think I've given a fairly concise review of what the purpose of the bill is. I have passed out to you also some emails and letters I've received from both printers and paper suppliers that this is a very important piece of legislation. It's kind of the opposite of Nexus, but it also, I think, is my first Nexus bill was to support the small business person in Minnesota. This is a Nexus to support small business people in Minnesota in the printing industry.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. Welcome, Commissioner.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ward Ines with the Department of Revenue, and Representative Solberg accurately described the bill. This issue was flagged for us earlier this year by a very representative sample of the printing industry, and essentially there's ambiguity in our statute, and Representative Solberg is accurate. There's a potential that when an out-of-state customer would deliver paper, they have customized paper they want to use, they can purchase it at a cheaper price than the printer can, they deliver this paper to an in-state printer, that is enough to create, potentially trigger nexus under the statute. Most of the other states that are our primary competitors in the printing industry have adopted very explicit exclusions to say that the transfer of the paper, the product into the jurisdiction does not trigger nexus. And what we were hearing from the printing industry is that many out-of-state customers were just saying, we're not going to consider a Minnesota-based printer until this issue is clarified and is a safe harbor for us. And so we went back and did our due diligence in preparing the revenue estimate, and we could find no instances at the department where the transfer of product into the state for printing purposes triggered nexus. So it has not been our custom and usage to do that, to interpret the law that way, but the printing industry is very nervous about it, and the customers are not going to, basically they're not interested in utilizing Minnesota printers until we clarify this issue. So with the amendment I think Joel Michael was getting, we are confident that this bill would be revenue neutral, or have no revenue impact, I should say, and it would provide a high level of comfort to the print industry, and hopefully the out-of-state sole customers would start up again. Our two biggest competitors are Wisconsin and Illinois, and they have both passed exceptions that are very comparable to what Representative Solberg is proposing today.
And Madam Chair, I have to apologize for two things. I got a cold, first of all. So if I sneeze, it's the allergies if I have to. But the other thing is I didn't have the amendment in my packet, and so I apologize for
that. No problem. It's coming. Yeah. Can I ask Commissioner Innes, when did these other, the safety just mentioned, how long ago did they do that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, is a relatively recent phenomenon. Maybe individuals from the printing lobby can articulate a little more, but I know a number of states, Wisconsin, Illinois, I thought I had actually the statute attached here, and I don't, but I believe it's a fairly recent phenomenon, and maybe
okay.
Somebody from the printing industry can...
I guess I just want to get to Representative Solberg. It seems really unfair now to not move him along, but as I stated, I don't know if you're in here yet, Commissioner Innes, that we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax, but I think Representative Solberg has an idea here. Wait, see what the Senate actually does. So it's possible. You know, the omnibus tax bill has to be out on about April 19th, so we're talking about 3 weeks. So there's not a huge benefit one way or another. I do understand people don't want to be part of the omnibus tax bill. I understand that. But we haven't been able to get Green Acres done, and that, you know, people I think just have to remember that there's a lot of panic going on about that, much at a much higher level, and that is not yet solved, and a federal conformity should have been done in January, in my opinion, and that has not been solved. So I want to work with Representative Solberg to see what the Senate does here, and then maybe we could take it back off. But can you tell me what the, you know, what is the urgency between today and 3 weeks from now?
You know, Madam Chair, I can comment on that. This individual can as well. But, you know, what we heard very clear and unequivocally from the printing industry, and a very broad swath of them, is that they are losing business as we speak because people just refuse to bid on jobs that have a Minnesota printer involved. And I think one of the concerns, there's probably a lot of concerns, but we're losing business currently. It's already an industry, I'm sure, is under some distress because of the overall economy. And I also think, you know, you lose a customer one time, and they develop a relationship with another printer in another state, you never know if you're going to win that customer back. So I think every day that goes by, potential harm to the industry could be permanent. It'd be nice if we could fix this as quickly and expeditiously as possible. But this, you could probably comment on in more detail, but I think timing is essential. And
Madam Chair,
okay, thank you.
Let me just add a little bit to that as well.
Representative Solberg, can I first interrupt you and say that Representative Solberg is now going to move the H1073A1 amendment to get the bill on the form the author would like it. Discussion of amendment. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Okay. Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, I understand there are some very large contracts that are probably at stake in a very time-sensitive way. So all of that is comments.
Okay, and Representative Solberg, I was just asking Mr. Michael again, you know, I really don't see a problem with the Senate Act that we could take it back out of here, say, next week and send it. But I, you know, the Senate, you know, I couldn't seem to get conformity done. And somehow they just got the Szymanski bill in trouble, so I'm a little leery. So, anyway,
Madam Chair,
if you're comfortable with that.
I appreciate that, that statement. I appreciate your problem with the Senate, because I have that all the time. Particularly a particular senator sometimes.
Okay.
But I also appreciate the second part if we can resolve that.
Okay, thank you. And we have Zellers and Coles, but I think, did you want to have this testifier speak first?
Answer
okay.
Your question.
If that's okay, Representative Zellers and Coles will go to the testifier. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, David Raji with the Printing Industry of Minnesota. I'm president and CEO. To answer the first question, there's 23 states that are competing, or actually 23 states that have adopted this similar language. And those would be print markets that our printers in Minnesota compete against on a daily basis. The urgency of the bill is basically that in the spring of the year, there are a number of large multiple-year contracts that are bid. And in the April time frame, there's a probably conservatively looking at $100 million worth of print work that is on the sideline that our members would like to take a shot at bidding. Would be a multiple-year contract, many millions of dollars in each of those contracts, and it's a conservative number just doing a survey of our membership. So, and that's the reason.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it. Representative Sellers.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, Madam Chair, a constituent of mine who has a very big printing business is in my district, and I met with Mr. Thigpen out in Maple Grove, and I think he can maybe give you some specific examples if you'd like. I mean, I know he's in the audience,
sure,
and he was
sure
planning to testify anyway, so we'll boost him to the chair faster but based on our time today. But I think he'd give you an idea, because I, along with you, am always skeptical of the Senate. Anybody who wears a powdered wig and robe should be looked at skeptically. But they will give you some specific examples, and it isn't just thousands. It's hundreds of millions of dollars worth of business that we could lose every day. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Thigpen.
Okay, and I apologize, Representative Zellers. Representative Zellers mentioned this to me at the start of the hearing that he had his constituent here who wanted to address us, so I apologize. Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. And thank you for the opportunity for me to address this. And yes, indeed, we do have several causes for concern. We did a brief study as far as sending it out to the customers. We sent 25 such notices to customers about how they felt about flight risk, how we felt about the flight risk of these customers. And I can tell you, alone, these customers are over $100 million worth of business. And 24 out of 25 were returned within a day, saying that absolutely it would be imminent flight risk. This is represents 41% of the business that we have currently that paper is shipped in from out of state. And I can tell you for sure that it would not be long that this will be going. This is the bid season as far as we're concerned. By the time we get to second quarter, specifically June time frame, we've just about closed everything out. They have made decisions on their print buys and what they're going to do at that point in time. We have several customers that are very nervous about it. Tom Moore, Senior Vice President of Sales, basically said that this is a daily occurrence, that they are checking on this bill and how we're doing in the state of Minnesota. We are not alone in our R. Donnelly facility as far as just, we are just one part of the business. We have over 2,000 Minnesotans employed at five separate venues, and each one of them has the same kind of concerns as we're looking at this. I can tell you that there's a lot at stake, not only for us, but the paper mills, the UPM, the New Pages, the Versos, and warehousing and logistics, all of this business that supports us, absolutely. I must have had probably 15 calls yesterday from these folks that service this to try to see if they could bring anything to the table to help us out in today's discussion, because a significant part of their business kind of really revolves around the printing world.
Thank you. You're wearing me down here.
Madam Chair, I'd rather have somebody else wear you down.
Okay, let's have more people see if they can wear us down.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do appreciate the concern you have, and based on experience, you should be as skeptical as anyone else. But, Madam Chair, for the record, on the record for everyone here, I will do all in my power to keep this from being any kind of shenanigans in the House. That includes in controlling my role on the House floor, which I think is a pretty big statement right there, just to contain my seatmates is, those in the dog pound, because it is such a very, very, I mean, it is really, I'm try not to be too hyperbolic here, but this is a big deal, and this is going to mean, and it's not just, I think you can probably tell by who's next at the table, it's not just a business industry, it's it crosses all kinds of groups. So I appreciate your consideration, Madam Chair.
Representative Dollars, can you tell us again that your testifier's name for the tape? We didn't get it. We want to get it on the record.
Sure, it's Fred Thigpen from R.R. Donnelly.
Okay. We didn't get the name quite right for the tape, so we've got that there. Okay, thanks. I guess, you know, I'll just be honest, Representative Goldberg, I'm of two minds now because, you know, every day Minnesotans are filing their taxes, and we are not conforming. And it has been a very serious issue for far more Minnesotans than this bill. And we have not gotten federal conformity done. We had a battle through the process. We had to endure tons of amendments on the House floor to get that bill over. Then the Senate didn't send it back. Then they put on Green Acres, and we're going to go to a conference today. And it's very serious for lots of people. And we've got the Green Acres issue. Again, very serious for lots of people. And we can't seem to pull that off. And so then now we have the printing industry. But I'm listening to the jobs component, and I really care about that. And, you know, I'm feeling like maybe it's up to the committee here that we should send it to the General Register and ask the Speaker to hold the bill there until the Senate acts. Because, you know, I just, on the other hand, you know, as a member of this committee, how many, literally, millions of filers are waiting for federal conformity to take place. And it's serious, and the Commissioner of Revenue is going to be at the conference committee today, and we're going to be arguing about Green Acres too. So, I mean, do you have a thought on this? I mean, could we send it and have the, see if we could get the Speaker to hold it?
Well, I think there is a little bit of an urgency, and I also appreciate a great deal the difficulty that we've kind of made light of the Senate to begin with, but it is very serious as well, as you've stated. Not only if you would move this forward and put it on the General Registry, I have a commitment from, I think, every Republican that this will go clean. It's up for a vote in the Senate. It already has passed their general orders, so it's on their calendar for the day or whatever they call it. So it's no longer amendable on the Senate floor. It does include the amendments that we put on, so I think they're identical. I would also give you my promise that if any amendment is tried on the House floor, I will pull the bill. And I control that on the House floor under custom and usage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this is, you know, if it's really Daley's job, I think we need to move. But maybe we can hear from the next testifier and I'll think about, everybody think about this, what you want to do here. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Howard Fisk. I'm Vice President of Graphic Communications Union. Currently, what I'm seeing in our negotiations and with our members is a severe downturn in printing, partly because of tax implications, partly because of perception. We have states all around us that have a competitive advantage over us. We currently have about 25% of our members laid off. Some of those layoffs are permanent. I think this bill would do a great deal to rectify that, to keep these good printing jobs in Minnesota. And that is the reason I'm here today, to testify for my members so they can keep their good jobs. Please support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Was it Mr. Fisk?
Fisk, yes.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it. Is there anyone else in the public who wanted to testify for or against the bill? To help wear us down further? Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Mike Amundson, and I'm Chief Financial Officer of Brown Printing Company in Waseca, Minnesota. And we employ about 1,100 people, and unfortunately, we've gone through the same round of layoffs, laying off approximately 100 people in the last 2 months. I have on my desk right now a request for proposal from a national company that would result in a 5-year contract. So this is a contract that's only going to be let every 5 years. The printing component of this contract is worth well in excess of $50 million a year. This particular company has printed in Minnesota in the past and has withdrawn from the state because of the nexus issue. And they have told me that they will not print in Minnesota unless this is resolved. The request for proposal is due on April 30th.
Okay. Very effective. Thank you. Representative Coles and Demmer and Loeffler. Representative Coles.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, Representative Goldberg, you had me at hello. Madam Chair, I am a fan of federal conformity. I think it's an absolute shame that we did not act on a federal conformity bill in January. That said, to I think compare federal conformity to printing jobs is it doesn't work, Madam Chair. I think this is the difference between somebody getting a 5-year contract and being able to employ 10, 20, 30 good people at good paying jobs for an extended period in these economic times. I don't know why we wouldn't pass this today. I don't know why we wouldn't put it on the general register. There's still ways to slow this thing down, and if the Senate screws it up, we can fix it in the tax bill. There's no reason not to put this on the general register today. And Madam Chair, if you don't do so at the appropriate time, I will make that motion. So I hope everybody else has worn you down. I wasn't much of a sell on this one, but it's not the same as federal conformity. The difference is a job versus the ability to claim a deduction that's important for doing your taxes, and conformity is a good thing. We all agree with that, but there's a big difference between the two.
In Representative Coles, I should just be clear, I'm not trying to compare them as far as merit. I'm saying the Senate's track record is not good so far this year.
Amen.
That's all I'm trying to say. So I like to see the proof before we act rather than send them vehicles. But I think we've got a solution here. Is we could send it to the desk, let it sit at the general register, and the speaker could take it up after the Senate file comes over.
Well, and Madam Chair, there's all kinds of tools that we have. If they send over a clunker of a bill, we don't have to confer with them. The conference committee can get appointed and never meet. Madam Chair, and we can fix this thing. There's all kinds of ways to fix this thing, and we should move now.
Thank you, Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a quick question, and I don't know if Representative Solberg might be able to answer it. Is this a new problem? Has this been going on for a number of years, or is this something that just came up?
Representative Solberg.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Demmer, my understanding is that the Department of Finance has been interpreting the law as this bill would read. But I think that there's nervousness in the printing community over it, and so I think that this is more of a clarification. I think and maybe the commissioner can verify that, my understanding of it.
Commissioner?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, this issue was a flag initially for us this late fall, early part of this year. We went back and did some due diligence with our auditors and others and see if there's any instances where we've actually invoked nexus based exclusively on these minimum contacts. We could find no example. Hence the zero revenue estimate. So our practice has been, our interpretation, as Representative Solberg said, has been consistent with the law, but the printing industry is nervous, and they want assurances, and they want an explicit statutory exception. That's why we're here.
President Demmer.
Thank you. That makes sense. In other words, it's an awareness that we have now, and we have it here. And I'll just say that I agree with Representative Cole.
Okay. We're going to go Representative Loeffler, and then we're going to see if Representative Solberg has a new motion. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and as I'm still learning business taxes, I'm just trying to struggle to understand if this is a precedent for other businesses or manufacturers that buy materials from out of state, and is this bigger than the printing industry in terms of its impact, and maybe our staff can address that in terms of definitions of nexus.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, I don't think this is a new sort of precedent. We've done this in a number of instances for specific situations where the similar concerns have been raised. So, for example, just one off the top of my head, in the financial institution area, there was concern about you could assert nexus potentially based on buying mortgages that were issued in Minnesota, for example. So we enacted a law that said if you're an out-of-state financial institution and you buy Minnesota mortgages, that doesn't create nexus, and it was done explicitly for the sort of similar policy reasons that we wanted to cause money to freely flow in and out of Minnesota to buy mortgages, and that's sort of the same thing that's going on here. And if you look in the nexus statute, there's a handful of these kinds of exceptions that are designed to specifically address, and in some ways really just to provide comfort to out-of-state companies that are fearful that an aggressive revenue department could you know, sort of push the envelope.
Okay, I think we're getting to a vote here, but Rep. Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I don't talk about this often, but my husband runs a small business, and the job issue is important. But I was wondering, Madam Chair, if Representative Zeller might be willing to give us one extra day of control in the dog pound. If we move forward.
No.
Representative Zeller.
Well, Madam Chair, at the risk of being flogged when we get to the 4.5 hour, I volunteered once again for the record to keep my seatmate, if nothing else, just Representative Emmer in control for one day. I mean, next departing Lake Minnetonka, I don't know what there is in
that. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Representative Solberg, your motion.
Madam Chair, I would like to, if I could, make a motion that would recommend House File 1073 be recommended to pass and placed in the General Registry.
Okay, so Representative Solberg moves his bill as amended to be placed on the General Register.
Yeah, as amended.
Discussion to the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries, and you're off to the General Register.
Madam Chair, you are very, very kind.